From Illinois Public Media, this is the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And I began my career as a local newspaper reporter 19 years ago. In that time, the industry I joined has been devastated. A recent report from the Medill School of Journalism at Northwestern projected that from 2005 to the end of this year, Americans will have lost a third of our newspapers. According to the same report, as of last year, 5 counties in Illinois had 0 sources of local news. More than 30 counties have just 1. That creates big challenges for keeping accurately informed about what's happening in your town and among your neighbors, be it a new ordinance passed by the county board or the latest show staged by a community theater. Later in today's program, we'll talk about the state of journalism in Illinois and the ideas that a task force came up with to try and save local news. But we begin today with a pair of new studies. One looked at how the decaying news landscape undermined public health efforts in rural areas during the COVID-19 pandemic. Another shed lights on where, in the absence of trusted local news outlets, people went instead to look for information about the pandemic. Nikki Usher authored the first of those studies, currently an associate professor in the Department of Communication at the University of San Diego. Usher was before that a professor at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. They're with me to talk about both of these studies. Nikki, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, and I'm happy to be chatting with you about really important stuff.
And listeners, I want to mention our phone lines are open if you want to join our conversation today. We'll be staying on this topic for about the first half hour. 800-222-9455 is the number. Let me say that again. 800-222-9455. How easy or hard was it for you to keep up with local information about the pandemic in its early days? Where do you go looking for local news? And are you concerned about the lack of local news sources where you are in Illinois? 800-222-9455. All right, Nikki, I want to begin with a personal question. Where did you get information about COVID-19 back in the early days of the pandemic? 4 years ago this month, yeah.
It's funny. I think just kind of backing up, the reason the pandemic is just so important for how we think about local news is because this was a matter of life or death. This wasn't are people showing up to vote, right? This was literally what you knew could affect literally your life outcome. And so I think, it seems like COVID-19 is 4 years ago, but I can't think of a better case for really drawing out the dynamics of why local news and information are important. For me, I was lucky enough to work at the university, and the university did an amazing job providing the most up-to-date information about what was happening through email, to be honest. But that was where I went because I knew the university honestly was looking out for me to tell me what I should be doing to stay safe.
Yeah. And I mean, I think what that gets at something in your research is, which is the idea of a storytelling network, right? News, a lot of us get news delivered by professionals such as myself, but it doesn't really tell the whole story of how people navigate their information landscapes. Talk about that.
So if you imagine kind of people being immersed in a community and just kind of trying to make sense of the world around them, people get information, sure, from news, like you said, but also from the community organizations that they're a part of, whether that be a church or somewhere they work, like in the University of Illinois. And they also get that news and information interpersonally. And all of this happens across really different channels. It can happen in my inbox, which is sort of how I got my COVID news, right? Or it can happen on social media, or it can just happen in community conversation. And so when we talk about the declines of local news, these are very real, right? To lose professionally reported journalism that you can trust as being based in fact about where you live is really problematic. But I think when we think about information that you need to navigate everyday life, there are ways that community organizations and even just community leaders can play a role in helping to support these diminished sort of professional news sources.
Well, let's talk then specifically about those local news sources, and we can come back to the other networks. But when people do turn to local news, especially in rural counties, where do they go these days? The paper is often gone, right?
Oh my gosh, this was just, I can't tell you how heartbreaking working on this paper was. I talked to 21 different rural public health officials that roughly covered about a third of Illinois public health departments, just given what their purview was. And every one of them were just so fundamentally defeated because people in their communities were going to national sources of news that were deeply, deeply partisan. And in most cases, sort of not even just like Fox News, but like really right-wing fringe sites. And so this national misinformation from sort of the conspiracy universe was actually having effects at home in Illinois and made it so much harder for these public health officials to just get out the news. And on the sort of the flip side of this, in local communities, many of these sort of once a week newspapers or twice a week newspapers, they're coming by mail, right? They have to be printed. This is actually quite expensive for news organizations, but it's not the best form for communicating fast-changing information. So, do you turn to the trusted local community weekly that's going to get to the mailbox, 5, 6 days later? And so, I think it was just a really difficult situation for trying to get quality information to people in your own community, in order to help them make decisions about how to stay healthy. Sorry if that sounds a little heartbreaking, but it was just really difficult to hear just the challenges that these public health officials were facing because of the misinformation that existed in these communities. And so, yeah.
No, it is heartbreaking, but we face unpleasant facts here on the 21st show. So,
Fair, fair, fair.
let me ask you about, you mentioned these local weeklies. I actually got my start at a local weekly paper. That's even before the 19 years ago. Does the sort of the distrust you see in national news outlets, right? And I have a relative who watches a lot of Fox News and refers to the New York Slimes and, National People's Radio and all that stuff. Does that trickle down to the Piatone, whatever, the Crete Record, those sorts of papers?
There's a really different relationship, and I think it really does depend on who owns and operates that news organization. In many cases, the person who's running a really important local business is also running a newspaper, right? And so I think it really is a community by community thing. I know that's not really a very clear answer, but none of the news that a lot of the news that people are getting from these community weeklies are about building up the place that they live, making them feel good about what it means to be part of a small town. Seeing their kids in covered in the football games and winning some festival or something like that, as a pageant festival or something. And so there's not a lot to distrust to some degree, right? Because it's really like news that ties the community together. But on the flip side, when you start to get up to local television news that kind of covers much larger areas or more regional news outlets, and we're talking maybe like the News Gazette or the Illinois Southern or the Illinoisian, I think you're saying it right. Right. That's so sort of
Southern
that like,
Illinois, yeah, and the State Journal Register, the Peoria Journal, yeah,
exactly.
exactly,
Peoria. So that's where I think you start to see the distrust creep in.
and
So because they get kind of tanked in the same big category as, institutional news media by somebody else.
it's twofold. There's the sort of the national political dynamic, but there's also the fact that a lot of those papers in particular, Springfield, Peoria, they're all owned by Gannett now, formerly Gatehouse. They've all been gutted by their private equity owners. But that's me on my soapbox. Let's come back to the public health officials you talk to. In the absence of, or maybe I'll just open it, but let me ask a more open-ended question. How did they get information out there then, if there was
So,
so much distrust?
yeah, I mean, I think the reliance on Facebook as a primary mode of communicating what the geo-local community is at the county level, I think can't be overstated. Public health officials were updating those Facebook pages sometimes, not just once a day, but four times a day. They kept chats open so that people could directly reach them. We know that rural communities tend to rely on social media a lot more to stay connected to their community compared to their sort of urban and suburban counterparts. So public health officials essentially became the news source, right, for the most up to date. Because you got to remember, right, shout out to Julie Pride, but Julie was sort of, constantly just giving us the moment by moment about how many case numbers there were in Champaign County. And so
Yeah,
the
so
public health
Champaign Public
officials,
Health Director for our
yeah,
listeners
sorry.
elsewhere. Yeah.
Yeah, for those who are, but I mean, also I think a leader in sort of the central Illinois region as well. And so public health officials became unsung heroes. Usually they fade into the background. They're doing some community health clinic or, helping, helping people get like the right food or restaurant inspections, right? This is like a low profile job that kind of just sits in the background. But its importance really came through when we saw these folks kind of in this position of having to communicate potentially life-saving information to their communities and information and guidance that was rapidly changing. So they were kind of in the kind of line of fire that maybe news organizations often find themselves in. And I guess the thing that also concerned me is that many of these public health officials kind of shied away from posting direct links to newspapers or local television, and in some cases referred to that as, not facts or not trustworthy or liable to cause too much controversy. And they didn't want people to think that that the public health department itself was biased by linking to a source that people in the community would be perceived as biased.
Wait,
So,
I want to put a pin or
yeah.
put shine a light on that. So what you're saying
Yeah.
is public health officials said, I'm not going to post this, be it from the State Journal Register or the New York Times or the local TV station, whatever it is, maybe even public media. I'm not going to post that article because I know that my target audience will then think I'm part of some cabal or, or posting untruths.
Yes. Absolutely. I mean,
So,
and you can
yeah,
say this
wow.
again, that there was a sort of almost self-censorship against posting links out to news organizations because, one, the concern that maybe the news organizations themselves were sort of, we are news organizations are not immune to making mistakes, but I think more so just that there was so much baggage associated with news itself that it detracted from the message that was in the news content. And so, public health officials, I mean, one of them referred to it as just, I only want to post facts. And to hear that like local news might not be considered a fact is kind of like a little heartbreaking to me. Again,
Yeah,
we
my
talked about
heart just broke right there. Yeah,
the
I
heart,
feel it.
but it's like think about this, like communities are so polarized and so distrustful of news that to link out to a news organization is just to open yourself up to like a barrage of crazy comments, right? And so what they did tell me is they tended to post to a lot of like CDC or John Hopkins or the Illinois Public Health Department, so really sort of like public health entities themselves versus the news organizations that might write those up and even maybe make those more intelligible for people.
That's fascinating. A couple minutes till we need to take a break. Tell the story of the local health official who was, I don't know, is it accused or encouraged, but basically said, someone said, we think you're a part of Q, this conspiracy idea that's out there.
I mean, the paper really only features one person telling that story, but it actually was pretty common across the sample of public health officials that I spoke with. I mean, often they were kind of communities turned against them as being kind of the instantiation of like the evil sort of 5G chip putting in cabal of sort of people who did not have the best intentions of community members in mind. And what was so concerning about that was that One, these public health departments that had never really been polarized because they were literally like doing restaurant checkups, right, and so forth, and running public health clinics, became sort of targets of political polarization. And a lot of, I think what you have to realize is a lot of these, people who work in communities have gone back from college or have returned. The people are often, public health officials were often from these communities themselves. It wasn't like they were like some stranger. These were people who like went to school together, went to high school together, lived next door to each other. And all of a sudden, they're seeing themselves caught in this kind of overwhelming antipathy towards basically trying to keep their communities alive. And that is just really fundamentally tells us something about how, even people who are embedded and trusted in their communities, the strength of kind of this misinformation, the strength of this hyper-partisanship, the strength of this decay in trust in institutions plays out at the community level. And I don't have a solution for that, but we need to remember it's not just about more information, right?
All right. Well, we're going to continue this conversation. We need to take a break. We are talking with Nikki Usher. They're an associate professor in the Department of Communication, the University of San Diego. Previously was at the U of I Urbana-Champaign. You're listening to The 21st Show. We're going to continue after a short break. Stay with us. This is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about how a decline in local news over the past few decades has changed the way we get our information, specifically the ways and the consequences that had during the COVID-19 pandemic. We're talking about a pair of papers today. One of them looks at the way rural public health officials tried to disseminate information in the context of COVID-19. And there's a separate study about where people actually, how in the absence of local news, where people went for information on COVID. The author of the first of those papers, the local health one, is Nikki Usher, associate professor in the Department of Communication at the University of San Diego. Usher was before that a professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. And I should say the study is about Illinois health departments. You can join our conversation today at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. All right, let's turn to where people do go. If they go on Facebook or Nextdoor, they see posts about found dogs and break-ins and things like that. It's all information. Is it journalism?
I think that is a big question that I'm going to dodge, because I do think that this study by Stephanie Edgerly and Yu Zhu out of Northwestern that I think is worth surfacing here. It was part of a larger special issue thinking about community information needs. So I think rather than just talking about journalism as a thing that is done by professionals, we need to center it back on the demand for that information that exists in terms of like what people actually need to live their lives. And politics is one of those, health is one of those, environment, education, right? So kind of like putting that reminder that it is about like the holistic experience of just navigating everyday life, and that requires information, some of which may be journalism. But in that study put out in our special issue of the Annals of American Political and Social Science on how Illinois residents got their news about COVID-19, I should say that even if you look across all sorts of socio-demographics, from where people were living to where people, to people's education, to even their interest in learning about the pandemic, local news was still the number one choice of where people would go. So that's, I think, it's almost like weirdly contradictory, because on one hand, they aren't trusting the local news, but on the other hand, they're still going there, but people are complicated.
Well, and local news is a big, has a number of definitions, right? And I would argue that local TV news can be very different from a local newspaper, in terms of the staff size, in terms of the, the length of the average story, the amount of information density you can pack in an average story, although that's all changing too.
I mean, I think that sort of to get back to your question, where were people going? There are sort of really six options. They were going to friends and family, they were going to community leaders, they were maybe looking to various politicians or community offices like the public health department, also like the internet, as like looking on the internet writ large. And then also like through sort of social media posts that they're seeing through their networks. So depending on your motivations to learn about the pandemic and some demographic characteristics, really depended on where you looked for news and information. So people who were living in cities, who were female, who were highly motivated to learn about the pandemic, actually kind of went to both the internet, social media, and traditional legacy media for that information. But people who were kind of less motivated, I would say, to learn about the pandemic tended, maybe they would have sort of some small source preferences. Maybe they would just get it through television or local news or just a friend, right? So their information seeking behavior, because they weren't all that motivated to seek that information in the first place, wasn't quite as comprehensive, right? And so also, the audience isn't a monolith, which makes this whole question about how to deal with the declines in local news more difficult.
Yeah, the audience is so segmented now. All right, we're going to spend the rest of the program talking about local news. So before we move on to that, let me ask you, coming back to the public health officials, what ideas are there for them to overcome this politicization that has been foisted upon them? You mentioned something that I also heard from, we talked with Ngozi Ezike, the former state public health director, last week on the show. And she said, when you don't think about public health, that's when they're doing their job best, right? They should not be top of mind. So what possible paths forward are there for them communicating with their skeptical public?
I mean, honestly, this isn't really part of their job description to run social media campaigns or to, serve as the primary source of news for their communities. So, really, turning that over to somebody who specializes in strategic communication, particularly for convincing sort of dubious audiences, like this is not part of the training of an ab. So, I think give these folks more resources, one of which could include people who can help them do this messaging because they can't do everything.
We have a phone call coming in. Kay is calling in from Champaign on line four. Kay, thanks for calling in.
Sure. I have a question about why the media is so reluctant to use the word lie. We use misinformation, disinformation, we talk about walking back statements, but very little do we hear. That's just a lie. And I think we need to hear that.
I appreciate the point, Kate. I have some views on this, but Nikki, do you want to take that first?
Well, I mean, a lie is like, I think much more at the individual level, right? Like this politician lied to us. They literally distorted the fact to persuade us of something that wasn't true. Whereas misinformation is just stuff that's wrong. It's not necessarily intentionally wrong. It's not necessarily strategically designed to make you do something that is against your interests. And then disinformation is a different category where it's like strategic manipulation, Russian election interference. So these words have power and their differences are important. And I think we can do a better job maybe explaining what those differences are. But, I guess you never know what's in somebody's heart. So if you use the word lie, you have to be sure that they meant to lie. And I think that that has held some news organizations back from using that word more directly.
I got to say, that's exactly it for me. And it's not even, I mean, you say what's in someone's heart. There are certainly politicians who have a track record for saying things that are false. But that's just it, right? Is it, have they deluded themselves into thinking that what they're saying is true? And in that case, it's a false statement, but it's not a lie. It's a little more of a legalistic distinction. I just always try to phrase, my own reporting is what someone says, not what they think about what they say, because I will never know what they think. I can only know what they say. at least with the current technology we have. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, Nikki, or maybe I'm just, you know, coward, too cowardly and don't want to be painted as a partisan or something. You certainly hear that critique about journalists out there as well.
I would suggest maybe the latter, but, you know, when you work for the national public radio, public media station, probably the goal of avoiding partisanship is one of the most important things that, you know, the organization can do as public media. So there might be different standards in different news organizations because people need guidance about what to think. And so calling something what it is can be very helpful as well.
Fascinating. Maybe a conversation we will continue another time.